Labor and Commerce Committee to order. It's 1:32 on February 24th, Thursday, and we have three bills that we'll hear today. Hopefully, we'll get rid of one. Senate Bill 90, Board of Public Accountancy Secretary, and then Senate Bill 92, Dentist, Dental Hygienist and Assistants, and then Senate Bill 68, Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, and they all have a further referral to the Finance Committee. And Senate Bill 90.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Giesel.
That was not on my agenda, so I don't have the materials for Senate Bill 90. I'll have
neither
to
do I.
Staff for it.
I don't have it. Do you have it here?
I had 68 and 92 on the agenda for today. I'd be happy to have my staff to get the materials. I just would need to wait when they do that.
Okay, Senator Giesel, we had previously heard the bill.
Understood, but and I had some questions concerning
okay.
The
great, we'll delay it. We'll hold it.
Okay. I've heard it before.
One thing though, will both of you be able to stay for the meeting because my vice chair has to leave, Senator Pasquin.
Yes.
So we'll just barely have a quorum. Okay.
You got to go.
Great. We'll delay it.
So I can go.
You can head out. Also, but present for the meeting, Senator Pasquin, Senator Giesel, and Senator Davis, and myself, Chair Senator Egan. So we will move to Senate Bill 92, Dentist, Dental Hygienist, and Assistants. And my staff, Dana Owen, will present the committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dana Owen. I'm staff to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. This bill had come to us from a member of the board of from the dental board, and apparently the dentists and the hygienists had spent a great deal of time crafting language for legislative changes that had not been made for many years in their statutes. They felt that their statutes were quite out of date. These are highly technical issues. I don't feel qualified to address all of those technical issues. David Logan is here in the audience who can explain to you more the details of how they arrived at what they have accomplished. We were making changes to this bill as late as Wednesday night, or as late as Tuesday night. In fact, we had a two-hour teleconference to make final changes, and I understand there are even still another couple of changes that may be coming forward. So I apologize to committee members for not having information in your hands earlier than today, but it was the soonest that we could actually get a sectional analysis and a new committee substitute. In any event, with that, I think I should also explain that you may remember earlier in the session, we divided the bill into two pieces. When the bill was brought to us, Senator Egan agreed to sponsor the bill under his name. When we divided the bill into two pieces, we made a committee bill out of that portion of the bill that would extend the Board of Dentistry for another 8 years, and that was the bill that this committee has already passed. What is remaining here in the bill you see before you are all the changes that the two parties had wanted to see enacted into law. So with that, if I could turn it over to Mr. Logan, perhaps, he would be the best person to ask detailed questions of.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Owen. And we've been joined by Senator Lynn Bernard. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Davis.
Do you want someone to give a motion to accept the new CS that's before us?
Yes, Senator.
I move that we use as a working document Senate Bill for Senate Bill number 92, and that's M. Is it M?
Yes, version M.
Mr. Chairman, the latest version is version I. Yes.
It's I. I'm sorry.
Yes.
It's I.
Okay, well,
so
I have.
Virgin I.
You do have Virgin
I. The M is the old.
I have. Okay. Well, hang on then. Let me. Okay. Version I?
All set. Yes. Version I is the latest,
yes.
Greatest.
Okay. New CS.
Draft that we have. Great.
Okay. If so members can look at version I.
Does someone want to object to so we can discuss it?
Right. Objection. So objection for discussion.
Okay. And Mr. Thank Chairman, one final note. Alpheus Bullard, who did the drafting, who did yeoman service drafting this bill, is online to answer questions as well.
All right. Great. Thank you. Mr. Owen, did you want to do a cross-sectional analysis of the CS, or would members like to hear the analysis?
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to read it.
I'm interested in somebody walking me through it because there's a lot of things here, different portions that need to be discussed with us, and then you can do the sectional.
Okay, great. Thank you, Senator Davis. Thank you, Mr. Owen. And now we have to testify on the bill itself. David Logan, Doctor of Dentistry. Mr. Logan, if you can come forward, state your affiliation and name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Logan. I'm a dentist here in Juneau. I'm also the legislative chair for the Alaska Dental Society and a former board president. Very lengthy bill. No question about it there. Very lengthy bill. It's the product of quite a long time with a work group that we formed about a year ago now, a little bit over a year ago there. It was made up of some members of the Hygiene Association, a couple of members of the Dental Association, and both a dentist and a hygiene member of the board there. So we had input from the major stakeholders that have an interest in this particular piece of legislation. As I'm sure you're aware, the overarching legislation here is what controls the day-to-day activities and the limits and the licensure of the dentists and the dental hygienists here in Alaska, and as well it also provides the basis for how the Board of Dentistry conducts its business, conducts license reviews, does its other actions there. It's been about 20 years since there has been any substantial review of the statutes themselves. There's certainly been additions, subtractions, changes made during those 20 years, but much of the language over 20 years had become antiquated. The materials had changed, the methods had changed, the terminology had changed, as you would expect in a vibrant profession there. So it was well overdue that it was time somebody went through that. So what you see before you represents a lot of hours, and I really do mean a lot of hours there, spent in trading documents back and forth, teleconferences, and other things there. There really isn't a lot of substantial changes to what the statutes say or what they regulate or anything of that nature. There's a couple of changes, but not many. Mostly it's just language changes and cleaning the language up and bringing it into more modern terminology and making a few oversight corrections that had happened over 20 years there. New features are that we move from having a part-time investigator to a full-time investigator, and I believe there's a representative here from occupational licensing to clarify that. The other is students that are undergoing training here in Alaska. There is some wording in there that kind of got rid of a gray area so that they could undergo that training legally here in Alaska without coming afar of the statutes there. And lastly, we defined what ownership of a dental practice means and who can own a dental practice, and that came about because we haven't had a mechanism over the years for a surviving spouse to actually own a dental practice during a transitional period, and now we have that. It's been something that's been it's taken place, but nobody has really questioned it, but legally it hasn't been something that can really happen under the current statutes.
Senator Bernard.
For interrupting, but that's on page 18. This is such a big subject. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I don't want to drag everyone through 19 pages of bill there without unless there's some interest in any particular sections, but I would be very happy to walk anybody through any section of the bill there.
So you, Dr. Logan, you're capable then of doing, talking to the sectional analysis then if
I can.
Have questions?
I do not have version I in front of me. I have version M in front of me.
Okay.
So I'm sure I can work off of that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
That would be great.
Senator Geisel, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
And then Senator Menard.
Mr. Logan? Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The section that I was curious about was Section 22, which states that the department shall employ a person who is not a member of the board as investigator for the board. My understanding is that that's part of the responsibility of the division to assign investigators, and sometimes those investigators have to be rotated. This is a very specific statute.
It is, because our desire is to have a full-time investigator for the board. I think you'll probably see over time several boards making the same requests there. The reason for that is cases are starting to back up for several of the boards there, and it's just simply getting investigator time. Somebody has to do the triage when you have a limited number of investigators for what cases they're going to handle. And in this case, we're a self-funding board. We're more than happy to make those payments out of our license fees. What we're not happy about, though, is the length of time that it takes to bring a case to conclusion there. And that is very bothersome to the dentists and the dental hygienists in Alaska.
Senator Geisel, follow up?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my interest, too, that you are going to up your dues to cover the full-time investigator as opposed to the part-time investigator. So you're putting skin in the game or whatever to get to the point where you feel that you're going to get adequate, timely investigations done on these cases. Is that a correct statement?
Through the chair, that's correct, Senator Menard. But we're more than willing to pay the freight on this one.
Thank you. And a follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chair. Also, I appreciate that you put 24 months in which a spouse can get a licensed dentist. Should there be a death in, let's see, page 18, I guess, go back to. This was a considerable problem in our area, where there was a terrible plane accident and the dentist left, and then the spouse came in. She did not live in Alaska, and it took many years and even court cases from a part-time partner. And so this is really legislation that does need to get cleaned up. I can just speak for my own case. My husband will be 2 years now, and I'm just now getting around to understanding my trust. What do I want to do with this commercial property that's designated for a dental office? And it just, you know, like we spoke in my office, you know, the first few months you're doing funeral stuff, and then it's, you know, the family issues and then the land, and then, you know, right now I'm ready to buckle down and figure out my own situation.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if you've been in the dental field for a long time, there's many issues that are all connected. So I appreciate that you're allowing 24 months for a spouse, and it could be, you know, there's at least my daughter just graduated from dental school in May. There's 50% now that are women, so
mm-hmm.
it could be a male spouse that's trying to put this together as well. So that's a correction I feel that will be very helpful.
Great, thank you, Senator Menard. Dr. Logan, you're excused for now, but I would love to have you stay in the committee room just in case we have further questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bernard.
Would you please speak to your board members, and a non-dentist has the opportunity to be president of this? Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Menard.
Board members.
There are, under the current legislation, anyone who is a member of the board can serve as president, dentist, hygienist, or public member.
And I just bring that up because mm-hmm. I don't know if that would be a concern for any of the committee people here. It just bothers me a little bit.
Great, thank you.
There's different makeups in different states. Am I correct, Dr. Logan?
There is. The majority of states have an open quorum. Anyone who serves on the board can serve as an officer there. Two states that I'm aware of are restrictive in that sense, that only a dentist can serve as the president.
Great. Thank you, Senator. Senator Geisel, did you have a follow-up?
Well, I guess I wasn't sure what Senator Menard was saying. I see in Section 20 that it will be required to be a dentist or dental hygienist now. And that's what you were saying, I think, perhaps, Senator Menard. Oh. Is that correct?
I did not see that as yes.
It's on page 10.
My apologies.
And it's Section 20. And it says, the board shall elect from among its members, number one, a president who is a licensed dentist or licensed dental hygienist, and number two, a secretary. So it looks like that got changed. Okay, and that's what you were...
And that was some of the changes that we were...
My apologies, Mr. Chairman. I did not realize that it happened in the CS there. No, we would strongly endorse that position.
Good.
There. It's very hard to imagine how a public member could effectively serve as the president, but it could theoretically have happened up until this point there. So, no, we would strongly encourage that to become.
Great. Thank you, Senator Geisel, for pointing that out.
Chairman, we probably could get through this faster if we just go through the sectional, even though there's not any real objection to it or whatever. Just run through it so we can get through. You got three bills you want to get through. We just can't just...
We have one. Hopefully it won't be that long.
I don't know if he's going to be the one to go through the session or if it's going to be your staff person that's going to go through the session.
Can we get the three people from the public that want to testify, and then we'll...
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
If we stick to the public testimony,
right.
I have no problem
right.
with that. But if
great.
We're going to jump back and forth, I have a problem with it.
Sure. I'll be more than happy to run through this. To be honest, I haven't seen the document before.
Oh,
so
you
as
said
I'm,
you wanted to complete the public testimony before we go into it.
We'll call for public testimony first. We have two people that definitely want to testify and one to offer information. Gail Walden is online from the Matsu LIO. Gail, can you give your affiliation and name for the record, please?
Yes, thank you. My name is Gail Walden, and I am a licensed dental hygienist from Wasilla. I am a member and officer of the Alaska State Dental Hygienists Association, and I am also one of the three hygienists that was on the committee that Dr. Logan is referring to that was formed to review, update, and condense the Dental Practice Act, including all the statutes that relate to dentistry, dental hygiene, and even dental assisting. So that is my affiliation. I was on the committee, to represent the interests of the Alaska State Dental Hygiene Association, and I was able to participate in all the discussions with the other members from the Alaska Board of Dental Examiners and the Alaska Dental Society. And as Dr. Logan stated, a lot of time and effort was put in by everyone that was involved in putting this bill together. And I am testifying today on behalf of the Alaska State Dental Hygienists Association. And we do currently support Senate Bill 92 for the following reasons. The current Dental Practice Act, as Dr. Logan stated, has not been thoroughly reviewed in a long time. I've heard up to approximately 20 years. And several of the statutes are inaccurate and do not represent existing practice or terminology. Just a very basic example is on page 3, line 17 of Senate Bill 92. The Alaska clinical examination is referred to, and Alaska no longer has its own clinical exam, but utilizes other states or regional examinations to meet qualifications for licensure. So that's just one basic example. So therefore, the Senate Bill 92 amends and repeals dental hygiene statute language and other language where appropriate and makes the Practice Act more concise and even a little bit more reader-friendly. Ultimately, one of the goals of our Dental Hygiene Association is to maintain the highest standards of dental hygiene, licensure, and practice, and we feel that Senate Bill 92 maintains these high standards for dental hygienists so that we can continue to provide excellent care to Alaskans. So thank you very much for taking the time to hear me.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Walden. Questions for Ms. Walden? Seeing none, thank you very much, Gail, for testifying.
You're welcome.
And next to testify, David Eichler, president of the State Board of Dental Examiners. Mr. Eichler, if you can give your name and affiliation for the record, please, or restate.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's David Eichler. I'm a private practice dentist in North Pole and currently president of the State Board of Dental Examiners for about another 5 days when I'm term limited out. And just wanted to give you a little bit of the genesis of the bill. A discussion with the Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Dental Board about 2 years ago, she mentioned that the bill, the Dental Practice Act, was in great need of revision. And so we took it upon ourselves to form the committee and did the job. And you have the product of that collaboration in front of you today. And I've heard a little bit of a discussion regarding investigations. I could give you the horror stories of what we deal with as a board with the investigative office and the lack of timeliness on their part. But I'll hopefully that's getting worked out by the our new director, who seems very capable and wanting to get that cleaned up. And I think the tools we've provided in statute here are going to help us out to get these investigation backlog taken care of. Currently, I have cases as much as 7 years old that have not had an accusation filed yet, and I don't think that's doing due diligence for the citizens of our state to allow a case to get that old and stale. And potentially having someone practice that shouldn't even be practicing. So that's kind of one of our goals with this these changes. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Eichler, for testifying. And Alpheus Ballard, Alpheus, are you still on or just online to answer questions?
Through the chair, I am. This is Alpheus Ballard of Ledge Legal.
Great. Thank you. Don't leave. What's the pleasure of the committee? Dr. Logan, would you like to do the sectional very briefly, or Mr. Owen? Dana Owen will run through the sectional. Yeah, maybe Dr. Logan, you can come forward, too, to answer questions if Dana doesn't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, my name is Dana Owen. I'm staff at the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and I do appreciate Dr. Logan being here because while I understand some of the background of how these changes came about, I'm certainly not as well-versed as Dr. Logan is. Section 1 of the bill removes the requirement that a person practicing dental hygiene or who is offering to practice dental hygiene must have a current certificate of registration. You'll see this this requirement eliminated in several other sections of the statute. The purpose, as I understand it, is that we no longer keep such a registration, and so it's, again, one of those outdated sections of the statute. Section 2 establishes the qualifications necessary for licensure as a dental hygienist. I think that's fairly straightforward. Section 3 amends the qualifications necessary for a dental hygienist to be licensed by credentials. What that refers to is people coming in from the state who have had training elsewhere or licensed elsewhere can present their credentials and get a license without having to go through all of the hoops that that someone originally has to do. Section 4 edits the dental hygiene licensing provision to provide that successful applicants for licensure will no longer be registered. Again, this is the reference to an antiquated section of statute. Sections 5 and 6 conform the renewal of license and lapse and reinstatement of license provision to the bill's removal of the registration requirements for dental hygienists. Section 7 allows a dental hygienist who has completed a course offered by or under the auspices of a program accredited by the Commission on Dental Accreditation of the American Dental Association or other equivalent course or program to receive a restorative function endorsement from the board. One of the changes I know that has come about, and perhaps Dr. Logan can be more specific about this, but my understanding is that what's accredited are programs, not schools. And in earlier versions of the bill, and I assume also in statute, we refer to schools, and that's incorrect. Okay. Section 8 changes the level of supervision required for dental hygiene students performing dental hygiene procedures, makes the section applicable to all students enrolled in dental hygiene programs. Sections 9 through 11 change the permitted scope of practice for a dental hygienist and clarify what practices and procedures may not be delegated to a dental hygienist by a dentist. Section 12 clarifies what practices and procedures a dental hygienist who has entered into a collaborative agreement with the dentist may be authorized by the dentist to perform. Section 13, I am told by Mr. Bullard, makes stylistic changes. Section 14 permits the board to sanction a dental hygienist who used or knowingly cooperated in deceit, fraud, or intentional misrepresentation to obtain a certificate or endorsement and amends the other grounds for discipline, suspension, or revocation of a dental hygienist's license. Section 15 gives the board the authority to impose a civil fine of up to $25,000 for a violation of AS 0832 or a regulation adopted under this chapter. Section 16 amends the list of dental hygienists to whom the provisions of AS 0832 do not apply. Section 17 provides new definitions applicable to AS 0832 for a licensed dental hygienist and licensed dentist. Section 18 adds a qualification for the public member of the board. Section 19 requires the members of the board to take an oath. Section 20 requires the president of the board to be a dentist or a dental hygienist. Section 28 amends the powers of the board. Section 22 requires the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to employ an investigator for the board. Section 23 requires the board to establish standards for dental radiological equipment that comply with applicable federal law, permits the board to charge a fee for equipment registered under this section, and removes a requirement that inspections of radiologic equipment be performed by a person with certain qualifications. Section 24 of the bill requires the board to maintain a registry of persons licensed as dentists or dental hygienists and persons certified as dental hygienists and a registry of licenses, certificates, and endorsements revoked by the board. Section 25 edits the dentist licensing provision to provide that successful applicants for a license will no longer be registered by the board. See Section 4 also covered a similar provision. Section 26 amends the qualifications for a license to practice dentistry in the state. Section 27 requires that an applicant for licensure as a dentist must be interviewed in person by the board. Sections 28 to 29 amend what is necessary for a dental hygienist to be licensed by credentials. Section 30 permits all persons enrolled as students in an accredited school of dentistry to perform dental procedures without a license if certain conditions are met. And I think that may be a misstatement. Again, I don't believe schools are accredited. I believe it's the programs within a school that are accredited. Let's see. Section 31 conforms the renewal of registration provision to the bill's removal of the registration requirements for dentists. Section 32 provides that a dentist who does not pay the license renewal fee forfeits the dentist's license, permits the board to reinstate a license upon certain conditions. Section 33 amends the grounds for discipline, suspension, or revocation of a license to practice dentistry. Section 34 permits a dental assistant who has completed a course offered by or under the auspices of a program accredited by the Commission on Dental Accreditation of the American Dental Association or other equivalent course or program to receive a restorative function endorsement from the board. Section 35 adds a new provision allowing persons enrolled in a program or course of study to perform dental assisting procedures as part of that course of study or program without a certificate if certain conditions are met. 36 adds a new section that provides who may own, operate, or maintain a dental practice, office, or clinic. I believe that's the section that Senator Menard was referring to earlier. Section 37 provides new definitions applicable to AS 0836 for certified dental assistant, licensed dental hygienist, and licensed dentist. Section 38 are repealers of numerous sections of statute. Section 39 instructs the reviser of statutes to change the catch line for OS 0836-250. And that's it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Owen. Questions for Mr. Owen? Senator Bernard.
Thank you.
Or for the doctor.
This would be whoever feels, I think, probably Dr. Logan would be better qualified to answer this. In the past, a dental hygienist could come forward, and I'm sorry I'm not speaking specifically to this, but it is a question I need to get answered to see if you think this is hidden in this committee substitute to take care of. A dental hygienist, once the dentist has given the exam, could take a day off, and the dental hygienist, since the dentist has instructed the hygienist and they've gone over the x-rays and the exam of what could work in the building without the dentist being there. Does that still exist?
Through the chair, Senator Menard.
Dr. Logan.
Dr. Logan. Yes, it does. The levels of supervision for a dental hygienist are relatively unchanged under that. Some minor tweaking under the collaborative agreement, but for the most part, yes. As long as the dentist has provided the initial diagnosis, then the hygienist would be able to work.
Mm-hmm. And may I have a follow-up?
Senator Bernard.
Has there been a considerable amount of discussion then since you've given me this information that the dental board, have they had any concern that, say, something went to heck in a handbasket and there isn't a licensed dentist in that office? The very oftentimes when periodonture is being treated, it can affect the heart, say a heart attack. And this became an insurance risk management, if you will, issue. So has your board taken that under preview and discussed that?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, I can't speak for the current board, but in general, yes, thought has been given to that, and it was felt overall the overall ability, though, to provide additional services for the public were outweighing what we considered a relatively minor risk.
Okay, thank you. I just obviously that was our background in both. Our two offices, Palmer Dental Center and West, we both chose not to do that for that very reason. So I would like to have that looked at sometime down the road because I really feel, you know, that is a responsibility of the dentist to be in a physically there because of, like I said, there's oftentimes it's a heart attack issue. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further questions for Dr. Logan or Mr. Owen? Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And it's my fault, but was there anyone in the audience that hadn't signed up that wished to testify? I would be more than happy to hear from you. Mr. Happiger, if you can come forward and state your name and affiliation for the record, please, and next time sign up, please. It's, oh, I'm sorry. It's, okay, you're excused this time, Don.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, my name is Don Habiger, and I'm Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing for the Department of Commerce. A couple of comments that, and I'm working off Draft M. I wasn't aware of Draft I at the time I did my work. But so I'm referring, my first comment is referring to page 4 on draft M. It's part of section 3, and it's the very top of, again, M's page. But I think the concept is fairly easy to understand. In this particular language or this particular version, it says pays the fees established by the board under AS 0801065. 065, or that subsection, actually gives the department authority to set the fees. So this is somewhat of a divergent track toward what's normally established in most other boards. And the reason I think the department sets the fees is we keep track of the costs, and we try to then set fees based on an annual analysis according to statute, and then just ask the boards, or the professions, I should say, to reimburse the department for their costs. So that's essentially how it works. I did have a brief conversation with Dr. Logan about this issue prior to the committee, and he didn't seem to indicate that that was a huge issue for them either. But I wanted to bring that to your attention. The other mostly informational piece here is on Section 5, again on Version M, and it talks about the renewal of licenses. And as this is written, it sort of indicates that the department will send out a form, and the applicant will fill out that form and return it with a fee. That has been what we've been doing traditionally, but as we get the division to the modern age, more and more what we're trying to accomplish is get some kind of website that is interactive, so that they can fill out their form. And what we may be doing, and we're doing this for business licensing, for example, is send out a postcard. It's cheaper. We pass those savings on to the clientele, if you will. And then they just are reminded that they are due for renewal. They go to the website. We give them all that information. They fill it out online. We capture that transaction with credit card payment, whatever, and we think that is servicing our consumer group better. So that's just a point of information, and we hope that's not a stumbling block, but we wanted to bring it to your attention. And then going way back to, again, on Version M, it's Section 21. I think Mr. Owen said it's in the new version, it's Section 23. It has to do with investigations. Currently, the board, or the profession, I should say, does have an investigator. It is true that this investigator has shared responsibilities. They have a number of other practices. When, and I don't know if the fiscal note has caught up yet, but it certainly left my department in draft form, or division rather, it was zero. We did not understand that this was an entirely new position. When I read it, I said, okay, we're meeting at least the intent of this particular piece. Now, however, that we understand what the profession wants, they want their dedicated investigator. It is really a model pulled off the medical board. We understand how that works, and so that fiscal note, if you do see a 01, obviously it will change for that. So that's another point of information. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Habiger, and I apologize. I didn't know that you had signed up. Questions for Mr. Habiger? Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, Don.
Thank you, sir.
It's not in the intent of the committee to move this bill today. We will take further testimony and maybe back with Version J at our next meeting. Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chair, could I ask Dr. Logan questions about what was just shared with us?
You bet.
Just for clarification and their intent.
Dr. Logan, if you can come back forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, again, David Logan.
Thanks, Dr. Logan. So what are your thoughts about what Mr. Habiger Director Habiger shared with us on page 4, section 3, about the fees established by the board? Was that conscious intent that you wrote it that way?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, to be honest, I'm a little sketchy on what came about with that, but the overall intent was still just to conform with the current statutes, and we have no interest in trying to micromanage the fees. So whatever mechanism it takes for the department to establish the fees and how they currently do it, where they run them by the board for at least a look, so you can't make a change, but you can at least give an opinion. That's good with us.
Great. Thank you. Could I do a second question? Then in Section 5, the notification for the license renewal, what Director Habiger described actually was crafted by the Board of Nursing several years ago to send out that postcard. It's a really efficient way to do it, and license renewals done online. Is the board okay with that?
Through the chair, I can't speak for the dental board there. I'm no longer a member of that. But for the dental society, yes, we're perfectly fine with the idea of a postcard and driving people to the website to print out the form there. Anything that saves a few trees seems beneficial there. And we would also encourage the use of email and having dedicated email addresses, at least for dentists. Our office addresses tend to stay relatively stable there.
Great. Thank
seems
you.
Seems like it saves both sides of money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point from Mr. Habiger. Further questions from Dr. Logan as long as he's in the hot seat again? Seeing none, thank you very much, David, for
thank
coming
you, Mr.
forward
Chair.
And for starting this bill. Further questions for either Mr. Habiger or Dr. Logan or my staff, Mr. Owen? Okay, well, we'll set this piece of legislation aside, and we will attack it at another meeting. And thank you, everybody, for testifying, and we will be bringing up Senate Bill 92 at a future date. Next to come before us and hasn't been heard as yet is Senate Bill 68, Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, and Senator John Coghill and his staff, Josh Banks, if you can come forward, please, and present Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, what I'll do is I have a meeting that's going to start in about 10 minutes, so I'd just like to introduce the bill and then have my staff, Josh Banks, come up and go through the bill section by section. And we have the president of the Commercial Fishing Agricultural Bank here to answer some of the technical questions. My history with the Commercial Fishing Agricultural Bank goes back a few years in that I've been impressed by the record that they have of kind of a private industry approach on a statutorily driven problem. The problem has been, how do we take care of some of the agricultural issues? How do we do some capitalization for the fishing industry? There's only a couple places in Alaska that actually can lend based on a fishing permit. And one of them is the Commercial Fishing Agricultural Bank, and one is the Division of Investments, which is a state-run organization. I prefer the private, tax-paying, private model, and they have done well. They are a creature of statutes, however, put together by the legislature and actually began to be funded by the legislature with the idea of increasing our loan capacity and our ability to encourage fishing in Alaska and the agricultural industry. The money was meant to really bring in a model that happened in the lower 48. Didn't actually go all that well, but it began to work in Alaska through a lot of hard work, quite frankly. This particular bank paid the state back, is a co-op driven style of bank. It's not like the bank you'd go up and have an ATM card at. It's a co-op bank. Meant primarily for natural resource development, the commercial fishing and agricultural issues. We're looking for an expansion of some of its authority. It's probably one of the only places where we so narrowly craft a private business in Alaska for their ability to move. Most of the things we're asking for in this bill are things that boards of directors will have to have that conversation on, especially in a private industry such as this. But it was statutorily driven, and it's something that I would like to see us move the borders out a little bit, give them a little more freedom to work as a prudent investor and a prudent lender. So I think when you see the sections brought before you, you'll see that's kind of the aim that I have. They have been a very well-run organization. They have no doubt had tough times, but I just want you to know that because they're statutorily defined, they are a private organization, just like we would define so many other things like our different corporation structures. This one is just much more narrowly defined, that's all. It's not put under the regular business laws. It was specifically statutorily driven. So I would like to see us open up a little bit of freedom for them to move within the industry. The dynamics of our economy, I think, call for it. The ability of them to manage money well has proven it. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is have Senate Bill 68 really managed by this young man who is really a university student, came to work in my office as an intern as a university, and has really taken us on as a project, knows it probably much better than I do, even though I have some history in this particular issue. So with that, Mr. Chairman, what I'll do is turn it over to Mr. Banks. You have the president of CFAB here to ask questions, and my own chief of staff will be here in case there are questions about the way I'm going to manage it starts to come into question. So with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you for bringing it up, and I would ask that you bring up Mr. Banks at this point.
Thank you very much, Senator Coghill, and thank you very much for presenting. Josh, come on forward. Mr. Banks, your turn to present.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Josh Banks. I'm an intern with Senator Coghill, and I'll be presenting a sectional of Senate Bill 68. Starting with Section 1. Section 1 will be amending the section on CFAB, on the CFAB Board of Directors, by taking off the requirement that a resident farmer must serve as an elected member of the bank. This by no means restricts a farmer from seeking a position on the board of directors, nor does it restrict the governor from appointing a farmer from one of the positions. Currently, there are only two members of the bank that are qualified to serve on this position, and this provision, if it passes, would give more freedom to the CFAB board of directors as well as to the voting members of the bank. Section 2 amends the powers of the bank in two ways. The first way is that it will remove the dollar limitations for loans given out to individuals, married couples, corporations, and limited liability companies that are seeking loans in natural resource development and tourism. This provision will allow CFAB to stay competitive with other lending organizations. In addition to this, subsections 8, 15, and 16 will allow CFAB to give loans to those that do not meet the resident or resident ownership requirements, providing that their operating facility is located in the state of Alaska and that a majority of interest of that organization is owned by United States residents. Subsections 10, 12, and 13 also are amended, but that is only to expand the current powers of CFAB to include the provisions provided in subsections 15 and 16. Section 3 will add that an audit by the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to be an exception to the confidentiality of records section in CFAB statutes. The fourth section of this bill will also amend the confidentiality of records section in that it will allow the bank to release a list of candidates running for director to the voting members of the bank. Section 5 will allow an examination of CFAB to be conducted by the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. This provision is to increase the credibility of CFAB. This examination was originally put in the statutes, but has recently been removed due to the misconception that the state pays the full fees of this examination. While initially the state does pay the fees of the examination, the CFAB will reimburse the state. Section 6 repeals two parts of the last statute. The first part being that it will repeal the definition of resident farmer. If there's no resident farmer that is required on the board of directors, there's no need to have the definition of a resident farmer in the last statutes. Second part that is repealed is the prohibition of CFAB having a lobbyist. Since CFAB is now a fully private lending organization, there is no need to prohibit the bank from having a lobbyist. And Section 7 of this bill will limit the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development from conducting an examination within the first year after the effective date. And finally, Section 8 will provide this effective date, which is immediately.
Mr. Chairman, would you happen to go back over that Section 8 again? First part of it, what did you say?
Section 8.
Because when I look at it, just say this, it takes effect. Am I looking at this act takes effect immediately? That says Section 8 on my...
Mr. Banks.
To the chair, the act does takes effect immediately under the section titled Time Statutes Become Law and Take Effect.
And you are working off this is the original bill, right? It hasn't been any changes made?
Is that what you're... No, ma'am, there's no...
Oh, it's the original bill?
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Maybe I can help a little bit on that. In order for the bank examination provisions to go into effect properly, what we'd like to do is have the rest of the law go in and then come around to the bank examination timing so that we're not forcing a bank examination right away, but it actually goes into cycle.
Okay. And that makes sense, and I understand why you were doing that, but like I said, when you look at 6 and 8, all it says on here is that when it takes effect. So I was wondering how you get that into that part of the bill if that's what you expect to happen. Just the statement there would allow that to happen?
Senator Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, what we're asking for is it to take effect after a year so that you will be able to go through an examination cycle. That gives you a chance to do your annual report and then go through the examination.
Okay, so we'll revert back to the original examination language here. That's what you're referring to? I suppose that must be what it is because it speaks to that.
Mr. Chairman, the effective date, if it's immediately, then within 1 year, the bank examination could happen, and that would be to allow 1 year's lapse so that you could fall into a cycle, basically. So it doesn't demand that it happens in a year, but it happens later on in the year, earlier on in the year. It's just that to fall into that.
It would give the lendee a year to file it. An annual report and actually have something to show for.
That's true.
The long. Okay. Great. Senator Davis, anything further?
No.
Great. Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Banks? Great. Thank you very much, Josh.
Thanks, sir.
For testifying. We do have a couple of folks signed up to provide testimony. Leah Clarett of CFAB is here. And would you like to come up and state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
Yeah, thank you. My name is Lee Klinger, and I am the president and CEO of Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, the one that SB 68 is about. We call it CFAB for short. That's kind of a lot easier to say than the previous title. I appreciate the opportunity to address you today. I'm going to beg your patience. I'm suffering from a little bit of a cold, and I'm not sure if it's, so I'm going to stay away. I've been bathing
join
in
the crowd.
Antibacterial stuff, but I'm not at the top of my game, so I just let you know that ahead of time. I would first like to thank Josh for his accounting of the bill, and I am going to be brief so as not to bore you with all the details again, but I am happy to answer any questions that you have. As Josh stated, this is a multifaceted bill. It does many things, and all of those things happen and probably are only of a concern to CFAB. That's who it generally affects. The first item that was listed was the statutory requirement for a farmer seat. And as Josh mentioned, if you were to look at our current membership and we would have to draw from that membership to fill that seat, there would only be two people that would be eligible to fill that seat. It is not that we do not want to do agriculture loans, and we are anxious and excited to do agriculture loans. We just have not had been approached or had the opportunity to grant many of those loans in the recent past. They have other options that most of the agriculture industry prefers to borrow from. So, but it doesn't eliminate the option, as Josh mentioned. They're still perfectly qualified to sit in that seat should one desire and one be a member of the bank. The second item, and I'm not going necessarily in the order that Josh did, I apologize. The SB 68 also provides for an examination, a periodic examination of CFAB by the state's bank examiners, with a resultant report being provided to the legislative auditor. For about 14 years, from 1989 to 2003, CFAB statute included similar language, and CFAB underwent those examinations annually. But in 2003, for reasons which I've never completely been clear about, the then-current administration persuaded the legislature to eliminate the requirement. It may seem strange that a financial institution would actively seek what appears to be more oversight, particularly when there's going to be a financial cost to that institution attached. But it's important to understand that this kind of independent and professional examination greatly enhances CFAB's credibility with its lender and affects the borrowing terms offered by that lender, which in turn affect what we can offer to our membership. There are other potential benefits to CFAB for this. Among them, the examination reports provide a reliable means of monitoring and evaluating the quality and effectiveness of our lending practices. It also allows CFAB's management, and although CFAB's management and staff take pride in their professional competence, we welcome the opportunity to have a qualified second set of eyes evaluating the overall results of our judgments. Experience has taught us that distance and impartiality, bolstered by insight into other financial institutions' practices and experience, can provide valuable guidance. SB 68 also seeks to remove the dollar limitations that were placed on loans for tourism and other resource-based activities when CFAB acquired the authority to make such loans in 2000. CFAB has not made a great deal of tourism and other resource-based loans, but we remain convinced that even the existing modest level of diversification has added to CFAB's overall effectiveness, to its creditworthiness, and to the ability to serve its basic markets. CFAB does not currently have any pending applications that exceed the current limits. We are aware, however, of a few past potential opportunities that were not encouraged because of these limitations. We simply believe that inflationary effects over time and the tendency toward mergers, acquisitions, and consolidations among subject operators will sooner or later cause the existing limitations to become problematic. SB 68 also seeks to permit CFAB to make the same kind of loans for non-resident owners if the operation has a bricks-and-mortar presence in Alaska. CFAB already has such authority to make such loans to a seafood processor, a timber processor, an agricultural processor, or a harvester. Our reasoning with regard to this part of the legislation is the realization that even though a lodge in Western Alaska, for example, may be owned by an outside corporation, it is an enhancement to the local economy and will provide some level of opportunities to Alaska employees, suppliers, and ancillary operations. It is another element of potential diversification that will strengthen CFAB's overall effectiveness.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Clare. Questions for the director? Great. Thank you very much for testifying, and hopefully you'll get better soon.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee on Senate Bill 68? We will be bringing this back before the committee to discuss further, and it's the intent of this committee to move Senate Bill 68 away from committee if there aren't any severe objections at our next meeting. So we'll hold it to our next meeting. And again, Josh, thank you very much for presenting. You did a great job. Your senator taught you well. And now we'll move back up the calendar and take the original bill, Senate Bill 90, the Board of Public Accountancy Secretary. Senator Giesel, do you have the information now? Great.
I do. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm, should I proceed?
Sure.
All right. And I'm glad that Senator Pascan is back because I talked with him about this earlier today. This bill, I support the intent of, and actually was thrilled to see it. I think it's a great idea. But one of the things that troubled me was why Personnel Department lowered the rate range for this employee to a 19 from 23. So my staff and I went back and kind of took a look, and it seems to be, the reason seems to be that it's not clear that the intent was that the person filling this role is actually a certified public accountant, which is a pretty high bar. I mean, it's an education bar and a certification. And also in looking at the Board of Public Accountancy's regulations that were made under the statute that was passed, there are criteria there, but it doesn't make it clear that this is a, first of all, professional, that they would have management role, and that they would have supervisory and policy level work. And so that's how it got scaled back to a 19. It looks like the person is just someone with accounting experience. So my concern was that perhaps there's an unintended consequence here, that other folks that are doing accounting would say, well, maybe I should be raised to a range 23 also. So I'm not really versed in how this could be corrected necessarily, other than to suggest perhaps that the board itself go back and take a look at their regulations and make it really clear that they intended a certified public accountant who would be managing and supervising and making policy level type decisions. And then there wouldn't be any question about the pay level, the range level.
Great. Thank you, Senator Giesel. And there is no one, Mr. Rowan, is that correct, signed up to testify or to talk to the concerns of Senator Giesel? Okay, come forward, please. State your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Nikki Neal. I'm the director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations. And I mean, Senator Giesel is correct that if it was the board's intent to require a CPA, that was not clear to us. It was my understanding that that was not a requirement. I can't tell you for sure that it would get it to a range 23. I'm concerned it wouldn't get quite that high, but we'd have to go back and take another look at it because statutes do require that for partially exempt positions, and this position was just put in the partially exempt service by the personnel board last week. It does require that we pay for like work. Essentially, we internally align. And so we'd have to go back, and if the board did clarify the minimum qualifications and responsibilities of the position, we'd again look at internal alignment and see if that would get us higher. I can't tell you for certain without doing a little bit of research.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Neal. Questions?
Are you taking a position with respect to Senate Bill 90?
We're neutral on the bill.
Okay. And if I may?
Senator Pascan.
It's my belief that the position would be there for purposes of making determinations into conduct of those, the conduct of the members. Is that, in other words, it's not just a bookkeeping accountant type of position? In other words, they're going to be making, again, policy decisions or determinations regarding investigations in addition to even administrative type of work.
Through the chair, Senator Pasvin, I do have the class specification here. It would take me a minute to look through it, but I'm wondering if the director here, Director Habiger, he may be more familiar about the responsibilities of the position and may be able to answer that without reading through the information that I have.
Mr. Habiger, you can come forward, please. Don't leave.
Okay.
Ms. Neal. If you can come forward, please. And again, name and affiliation for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, Don Habiger with the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. I think through the chair, Senator Giesel, to answer your question, I've had numerous dialogue with the CPA board on this particular issue in the last several months as the issues kind of unfolded. The original tent, I believe, as Senator Pascvan talked about at the last meeting, was range 23. It was incorporated in the fiscal note. And I've also talked to the board about their intent. Originally, it was a CPA requirement in HB 315. However, as the process grinds on for a bill, one of the issues that was brought up is there's a talent pool out there, maybe at the university level. Maybe it's somebody on another state executive CPA committee that is maybe second in the wing. And according to my dialogues with the board, they felt at a range 19 they still would not be successful having enough interest in finding a position, particularly that is new, that is going to take some policy changes. Some other issues that they were concerned about is in the particular CPA field, and I don't know quite how this all works together, but there's a lot of interest from folks outside the state in our particular licensure. I understand we have some attractive requirements, and so we see more and more folks from outside our jurisdiction looking at licensure. And to have somebody who is knowledgeable about a wide variety of practices in other jurisdictions was important to them. So in the end, they broaden House Bill 315 to include CPA requirement and accounting skills. Now, if you ask the CPA board, and I know they've contacted me several times, when we go through the interview process, they intend, and we've already dialogued about this, to insert themselves in the hiring process. They want to be a part of that process. We've already asked the Department of Law, and they've said that if a public board member is voluntary, but a part of our system, they can be considered an employee of the state for this regard, and so they could be part of the interview process. So that's how we understand that at this time, and we still think the bar is fairly high. And speaking, I think somewhat on behalf of the board, they would still like to see this bill go through.
Right. Just to add one more thing before I ask questions, we passed this legislation unanimously last year, mm-hmm. and a mistake was made. When the legislation was passed, the new hire couldn't have been over a range 19. So one of the things this legislation does is correct that to allow a range 23, because they couldn't hire anyone at range 23 because the limit was range 19 at the time, and this corrects that error from last year's legislation to increase it to 23 as well. Senator Pascvan.
I think that's close to right, but I think it was intended to be 23 right. a year ago.
Right. It was.
It was classified.
No, it was.
As
you're right. No, yes,
and
it was classified,
and I think misclassified at 19. And so what this does is it
corrects
it
that.
Dispenses with any
right.
question, but for the fact that the appropriate classification is 23.
The way the legislation was passed last year, they didn't have a choice but to classify it as at range 19.
Their interpretation. That's
right.
What I want to make sure.
Right. Not our interpretation.
Their interpretation.
I'm sorry.
So now we need to
right.
do this to correct their interpretation.
Right. Senator Giesel.
So my fundamental question is, with the broader definition of this job, the requirements of this job, is it going to require, as you use the term, internal alignment with other folks who have accounting experience or are doing accounting work? Will they also have to be raised to a range 23? That's my fundamental question.
Ms. Neal.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, it would be my position that if the legislature determines range 23 is appropriate, we would not compare other positions and job classifications that are subject to the pay plan to this position when internally aligning, because that determination of a range 23 was made outside of the pay plan. So you're absolutely right. There may be some individuals in other positions that may think that they a higher pay range for them is warranted because of this, but it would be our position that it's not, because they're subject to the pay plan.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Giesel. Further questions for Ms. Neal or Mr. Haviger, as long as they're in the hot seat? Seeing none, do we want to hold this over? I thought there would be somebody from the Board of Public Accountancy here to answer questions, but what's the pleasure of the committee? Right. Senator Passman.
I think we can move it unless there's some objection to moving it. Yep. Mr. Chair, I would move that we move Senate Bill 90 from this committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Passman, or Senator Passman. Is there objection? Seeing none, we'll take a brief at ease and then adjourn. Further to come before the committee, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. God willing.